Hello, this is Chris English with At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton Hove and a little further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this edition of the programme, there'll be news from the director of Age UK about the isolation of both old and not so old, who sometimes struggle to see, let alone have a conversation with, another human being, sometimes for days on end. We'll also be hearing about electric vehicles from TV adventurer Ben Fogle and Poppy Welsh from an organisation called Go Ultra Low. And we'll be hearing from a local gentleman, Colin Lyle, who's started a new charity. It's all about asphasia, which is a communication disability that often occurs after a stroke and leaves people with difficulty reading, writing and using numbers. But it's not all doom and gloom, as comedian Roy Hudd will be here to tell us all about the latest show, A Woman of No Importance, that's coming to the Theatre Royal later this month. And finally, we'll be following up on a story that was in the last edition of the programme, because we'll be hearing from the latest sailor to be crowned Yachtsman of the Year. But now it's time to find out about that dreadful thing, loneliness. Something that perhaps we've all suffered from time to time. Well, Age UK, who of course have a centre here in Brighton, have just launched a new research findings and a new programme to combat that. And joining us now on the telephone is Jane Vass, Director of Policy and Research at Age UK headquarters in London. Jane, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. Hello there.
And tell us a bit about this new initiative.
Well, anybody can be lonely at any age. But we were really shocked with this research we carried out with Cadbury Dairy Milk to find that there are as many as 225,000 older people who don't speak to anybody in a typical week. So that may be because they're sitting at home, their only companion is the television, but they haven't even got anybody to discuss that really great programme they just saw with because they're on their own.
Now, you talked about television there. Of course, one of your campaigns is to do something or try and do something to reverse the decision by the BBC about the licence fee.
It certainly is. We know how vital the free licence is to many older people because television really is their window on the world. If you're on your own, and you're one of those 225,000 people who don't get a chance to speak to anybody they know during the week, then it's really important.
And television aside, what can ordinary people do about this?
Well, the reason we're working with Cadbury Dairy Milk on this campaign is because there is actually so much that people can do. We also asked in this research about younger people, and often they were a bit shy, didn't know what they could do to help. But this campaign is aiming, first of all, to raise awareness that it really is an issue and really encourage people to perhaps pick up the phone to an older relative, to say hello to an older neighbour, or to buy one of the special Cadbury wordless bars and donate their words, because Cadbury's donating 30p from sale of all of these special edition bars to Age UK to enable us to carry out services such as lunch clubs, such as befriending schemes, and providing vital practical information and advice.
Now, as an older person myself, I sometimes feel invisible when I'm walking down the street or on the bus or something like that. Is that a common problem?
Yes, I've heard that so many times. To be honest, society doesn't always recognise that older people's contribution is really significant. Obviously, in the past, they've contributed contributed a huge amount through their work, through bringing up families. But many older people are still the mainstay of their local communities, volunteering, being involved in all sorts of local activities. So it's really important that as a society we're getting older, we ought to recognise and celebrate ageing and hopefully tackle this issue of loneliness, because to be honest, we're all ageing.
Absolutely. And other countries don't seem to suffer from this as badly as we do in the UK. I mean, the family is all important in places like France and Italy, for example.
Well, I think often there are assumptions that other countries are better at this or that. But as societies generally become more digitized, as people have to move around for work, then I think loneliness is going to afflict many people wherever you are. Obviously, it can be a problem for younger people too. But as you grow older, friends may pass away, you may become less able to get out and about. And that's why loneliness in later life can be so chronic and disabling and actually very bad for your health.
And of course, we talked about television, but radio, and we hope this programme, will take people out of their little lonely existence and out into the wider world.
I have to say, personally, I love radio. I always like the opportunity to talk to people around the country on the radio, and we know how important it is as a source of information as well, particularly if it helps you get an idea of what's going on in your local society. So, but if people are interested in this campaign, finding out more about how they can work with Age UK and Cadbury's to tackle loneliness, then we do have a page on our website at ageuk.org/donateyourwords. And of course, look out for those wordless bars, special edition, in the shops.
Now, generally, manufacturers aren't in it for the goodness of their health. So what's in it for Cadbury's?
Well, I think socially, many people across the country, particularly following the Joe Cox Commission on Loneliness, have realised that actually loneliness is an issue that afflicts everybody. So I think genuinely this, we hope that working together we will raise awareness and actually encourage people to who may be feeling lonely to get in touch with Age UK and see what's going on locally, but also think about it more broadly and what can be done across the country, keeping local activities going and just raising awareness.
And people, particularly when they get older, seem to get shyer. So is it important for them to fight that shyness and get out and about?
Well, I think we have to recognise that if you are chronically lonely, your world closes in, and actually it can be very, very difficult to make that first step. So it's not something you can just say to somebody, oh, get out and about and do things. Obviously, we know lots of people do their very best to keep as active and as involved and actually the mainstay of their local societies as possible. But that's really why our befriending schemes, as well as providing things for people to do, actually give people the confidence to take that first step. Because it can be so profoundly disabling, actually, chronic loneliness. There is research to show that it can actually be bad for things like heart health, etc. So it shouldn't be taken lightly.
Jane, thank you very much for joining us. And that contact details on the website.
Yes, thank you, Chris. Pleasure to talk to you.
Jane Vass from Age UK, and that website, www.ageuk/donateyourwords. Now, TV explorer and general man about the town, Ben Fogle, isn't afraid of taking on a challenge. He's climbed Mount Everest, rowed 3,000 miles across the Atlantic with rower James Cracknell, and competed in the six-day marathon de Sable, to name but a few. Now the TV broadcaster wants to encourage British road users to get behind the wheel of an electric car and make a small step in helping the environment. And Ben, joining us on the telephone. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Tell us about electric vehicles. I gather you've also got a young lady with you.
We do. We've got Poppy Welsh here, who's head of Go Ultra Low, who I'm part of this journey with. So Go Ultra Low is all about trying to encourage people like you and me to go electric. And I think that the research sort of that they've done proves a point. A recent study shows that two-thirds of people expect electric cars to be referred to simply as cars by 2030. In other words, it's going to become the normal. And the journey that I'm on now, which is going electric myself and getting an electric car, is one that I think many, many people across the whole country are going to be going through. And Poppy, working with Go Ultra Low, are trying to come up with resources to mist buff, but also just come up with accurate information. So, for example, I was at the EV Experience Center in Milton Keynes last week that has a selection of different electric cars so that you can actually understand the variables, the difference between the higher end vehicles and the better price point vehicles, understanding more about the number of electric charging points, and trying to give us the information we need to actually make the change.
Now, one of the problems, isn't it, is range for electric vehicles. I mean, I had to take a journey from Brighton to Manchester over the weekend, deliver a granddaughter to university. That wouldn't have been possible in an electric vehicle.
Well, I mean, these are all the myths that I suppose we're trying to change. So, first of all, you could go on to the Go Ultra Low website, which is goultralow.com, which has a lot of information and calculators. Now, that journey, if I'm trying to work out, Brighton to Manchester is probably about 300 miles on the dot.
Yep.
And actually, the range of most electric cars now does go between 200 and 300 at a stretch, I'll agree. But what you have to remember is that there are rapid chargers dotted around the country. The number of charging points is accelerating. Government's investing £70 million to put in more and more of these rapid chargers. So actually, if you went online, you can find out where these chargers are. So even if you're not convinced your car will have that 300-mile range in it, you are just on the boundary there, you could easily stop. It takes between 20 and 30 minutes to do a rapid car charge at a service station along the way, which is a very sensible stop. You're not going to do 300 miles without having a pee break unless you've got a very, very big bladder. And also, it's recommended that you break a journey up like that. So to have a 25-minute stop, read the paper, have a coffee, recharge your own physical batteries as well as the car, and you can complete the journey. But the other thing, I think, Chris, is that so many of us always highlight that one journey. Now, you're not going to be doing the Brighton to Manchester journey frequently. Yes, perhaps you're going to collect her at the end of term once, but sooner rather than later, she's going to want to take the train, or she's going to go with friends, or she's going to go on the bus. And I think a lot of us get blinded by that single big long journey that we might do each year. I hear it often. My wife, when I was talking about the electric car, was saying, yes, but what about that journey we do to Scotland, which we haven't done for 3 years, which is what I kind of reminded her. So I think it's about thinking about the frequent tasks you're going to do rather than those infrequent tasks. I don't know if Poppy has anything to add to that. I don't know if I've got any of the stats wrong or anything, but I think that's about right, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, that's totally. Most of the new vehicles coming out have between 200 and 300 miles range, as you say, and actually even some of the existing ones are only just below that. So, and there are over 40 different models available now spread across pure electric and plug-in hybrid vehicles. So there's actually quite a few to choose from.
And one of the other questions is modern vehicles are so full of electric gizmos, seats, audio equipment, heated windscreens. That's, I know, in the winter, but that will drain the battery as well, won't it? So does that shorten the range dramatically?
It can do a little bit. So it's just about planning your journey, use of those technologies that you mentioned. does have an effect, but if you know what that effect is, you're very much aware of the range your vehicle can do. And you know, there are, as Ben mentioned, more and more charge points around the country. We've got something like 25,000 charge point connectors at 9,500 locations. So there are a lot of options for charging these days.
Now, a lot of cars on motorways that we see, and I saw on that journey, are company cars. They're company vehicles. So isn't the major challenge to get companies to get their representatives and business people into electric cars?
Well, funnily enough, about I think it's about two-thirds of electric vehicle sales go to businesses. Because there are quite a lot of different advantages, particularly around cost. So for fleets and business owners who are really looking to reduce costs across the board, actually electric vehicles can be a really good option. You can drive them from as little as 2 or 3 pence a mile, which is in comparison to probably up to about 12 pence a mile for a petrol or diesel car. The maintenance costs are lower just simply because there are fewer moving parts. And then there are other sort of regional advantages as well. So if you're driving in and around London, you don't have to pay the congestion charge or the ULEZ. And there are things like, you know, some cities have access to bus lanes and free parking. So once you've kind of added together all those advantages, there are tax advantages as well. Actually, for businesses, electric vehicles are a really good option.
Okay, going back to the domestic listener, are they thinking of changing their car? But the cost price of electric vehicles is much, much higher than petrol or diesel.
I mean, I'm looking at this right now, and yes, if you're looking at a brand new vehicle, the reality is that the price point is higher than many of the combustion engines. But having said that, a lot of people don't buy their car outright; they lease the cars. And if you look at the overall picture, the bigger picture, as in the day-to-day running costs, the fact there's less moving parts in the car, so there's the maintenance costs start to be reduced. Actually, it's give and take. So yes, perhaps your initial outlay may be a little bit higher, but the long-term cost reductions should ultimately be economically more viable. And the other thing is that, you know, as electric cars more and more come on the market, there's already 40 of them around. That price point is not going to. They are reducing. They're coming down. They're already subsidized by the government. And that there are plenty of electric cars at a reasonable price point that are available out there.
Now, we're told that electric vehicles are the future and of course, the present as well, as you said. But how far in the future do you think, Ben, that it will be that you can take one on one of your adventures?
I don't think it will be very long at all, to be honest. I think I think you only need to have a look at government hopes and ambitions to have fully electric vehicles on the road within the next kind of decade, two decades. And this notion that by 2030, most of us think that electric cars will be in the majority rather than the minority. And I think the idea of driving an electric car across a desert with substitute solar panels on the roof, I think is coming sooner rather than later. And one would hope that in all of the emerging markets around the world, population growth, more and more people will want to adopt vehicles, that most of the car brands will see the importance of having lower cost electric vehicles available for the emerging markets all across the world. And I think it will be something that we just do. I think there'll be charging points everywhere. Whether there'll be electric charging points in the middle of the desert, I don't know, but there are solar panels and a great big ball of sun up there. So one would hope that this is going to happen in my lifetime.
Ben and Polly, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb. Don't forget that you can listen again to recent editions of At Home This Morning at any time by just visiting our website at www.greymattersproductions.org.uk.
Aphasia is a condition that following a stroke, and to tell us all about it, Colin Lyle from Say Aphasia. Have I got that right? Is that the word, right way?
Yes, that's right. Say aphasia and is a charity.
So what is the condition? What is aphasia?
I had a stroke 6 years ago, and I couldn't get any of the words right. My intelligence was intact, but I couldn't get the words out. I was obviously in the hospital. When I was sort of discharged, I had a speech therapy for probably about a year to get the words right. It took a long time that I have aphasia, and I'll tell you that now so that if there's words that I can't get, then you know what it is. But basically, when you have a stroke, and there is other injuries as well, brain tumour and stuff like that, they have to start again in the brain in terms of reading, writing, speaking, numbers. And it's because it is a very complicated brain. It's everybody's sort of very, very different. When I was in the hospital, my words was sort of yes and no. I couldn't really do anything else. So when I had the speech therapy in my house for about the first one was about 4 months, every 2 days. So it's very, very tired trying to talk for an hour, and. I was very, very lucky. It took about a year that my particular brain, I could get some of the words out, but I couldn't do, numbers, but I can't read and can't write. I'm quite lucky actually, because 5 years ago, I wouldn't have my voice recognition that I have in my iPhone. If I didn't have that, then I wouldn't be doing any emails or texts or anything like that. So I'm kind of very, very lucky.
I mean, I have to say, looking at you, you look very fit.
Yeah.
What, sort of 40, 50-year-old?
Yeah.
And nobody would know.
Yeah. It was it's interesting. My life before my stroke, I used to do marathons and desert runs. I did Marathon Le Sable twice, and I did some other company called Racing the Planet, doing lots of running as well. And it's a great experience to do that sort of stuff. So after my stroke, I did try to get even though I couldn't get the words out, I could still run, you know, sort of. I'm quite lucky that a lot of people that I know that have a stroke, they might be half paralysed. I'm very lucky because mine is, it's weak, but it's not paralysed. So I can't, it's numb. My right side, I think, is weak. But I'm just very, very lucky. It's good. After my therapy for the speech therapy, the NHS who do the speech therapy, they said that now I'm finished, one of the things I could do to talk a lot is I could do my befriending scheme that they do in Brighton for other people that have a stroke. And it's quite good for actually, because I could go to the house with someone who had a stroke. A lot of people, they might be a little bit older, they can't get out, they can't get a bus, you know, and they might be a little bit lonely. So I go to their house, and it's good for the person who had a stroke, but it's also for me to practice to get the words right. And also I was just very lucky to have my family and friends to talk a lot, and even they were trying to work out what they were trying to say, but I'm still trying to be better.
And you have drop-in centres, don't you?
When I was kind of a little bit better, I wasn't so tired. I was getting a little bit bored, but I realised that I can't read and can't write, so I can't do the job that I did before. So I decided to do a charity. They reckon that there's probably the UK, there's probably about 350,000 people have aphasia, but it's like a silent condition that people can't get the words out. So I decided to do a charity so that we can have a drop-in centre, with the first one in Hove, to have a conversation with other people who like mining, who can't get the words out, and have a drop-in group.
So is that open to all?
Yes. Basically, when we the first we, this this was this started about 3 years ago. The first one was Hove. There's now probably about 25 to 30 people every Friday morning for the drop-in group. Everybody is very, very different. I'm the lucky ones that I can have a conversation. There's a lot of people who can't get the words out, or so you know, but they might be able to read or write, and so if they want to talk about life, they can write it down rather than talking. And it's good because there's no rush to get the words out. I think the lifestyle now is just very, very quickly. I mean, if you go to a pub, for example, you've got about 1 second to talk about what they're talking about, what they're saying. And if I can't get that word, they'll be talking about something else. And that's basically how it works. When we go to the dropping centre, we can be talking about, you know, might be someone, another person that had a stroke. It might be, you know, just what they do before the stroke. They might be just talking about the football. But it just takes. There's no rush to work out. It might take 10 minutes to what they're trying to say. And sometimes it's very, very funny. But it's good because it's very good to talk. And I think everybody wants to get better. And one of the things they can do, it means that we can. Not practice, but just to have a conversation without pressure.
And if somebody wants to come along to one of your sessions,
yep.
Can they do that? And where are they?
Right. Well, we now we have 9 drop-in centres in the UK. We've got 7 drop-in centres in Sussex. There's another drop-in centre in Birmingham and another one in Skipton, which is near Leeds. And basically, one of the things that we do, obviously, is all of the we have the. There you go. There's the word that I can't pronounce. It's a we've got a website, and we do the social media. So there's no we know that whether it's the speech therapist, it might be the hospital, it might be the website, it might be a family and friends who realise that there's a place that people that have aphasia. So when we go to a drop-in group, they're all kind of there. If they a lot of people might be a little bit shy, so their friends or their family can go. The carers are quite happy to go as well. Some people actually a slight brain might be might be aphasia. There might be a apraxia, which is kind of slightly differently, or a dysarthria, which is again it's slightly differently. But they're kind of all welcome because it's a you know. It's a silent disease which is wants to get everybody to trying to get a little bit better. So when we go to the drop-in group, they're quite happy to go to the drop-in group. We don't have to have a conversation beforehand, so it's quite easy to get there.
And where are they?
Sussex. We've got one in Eastbourne. We've got one in Brighton, which is near Woodingdean. One in Hove. One in Worthing. One in Durrington. One in Crawley, and one in Chichester.
And as I say, if people listen to this, think I'd like to come along to one of these.
Yeah.
How can they find out about it? Is it on the website?
Yeah, so if you go to the website, it's got all of the it's all of the dates and the times and all the different drop-in groups, and so yeah, that's the best way to do it. Like I say, it's called Say Aphasia. A lot of people it's not a good word, aphasia, but once you recognise what it is, look at your Google and you'll see where it is.
So the website is what www.sayaphasia, which is sayaphasia.org.
Yes, well done. I'm glad that I didn't have to do that because my alphabet is wonky.
Well, Colin, thank you very much for coming in. Yeah. And I think we might be hearing more from you in the future.
Yeah, it's good. I don't know if I can keep talking, but we've got lots of events that we do as well. We've got the half marathon. We've been doing this for 3 years now. We have 10 places for the half marathon. It's in next year. It's February, and it's February the 23rd or something like that. So if anybody wants to do this, all of my I can have a conversation. You can have my telephone is in the website, and all of my social media that I have. You can have a look. So if anybody wants to do the half marathon for my charity, then they're quite welcome to attend.
Well, the email is info@sayaphasia, which is SAYAPHASIA, or one word, .org. And that is also the website address, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Colin, thank you very much indeed joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Roy Hudd will be appearing in Oscar Wilde's A Woman of No Importance at the Theatre Royal from Monday the 23rd to Saturday the 28th of September. And from the rehearsal studios, where Roy and the cast are joining us on a rather scratchy telephone, good morning, Roy.
Morning, Chris.
And it's just that, A Woman of No Importance. A new play?
Not really. It's by Oscar Wilde, no less.
A new for you? Have you been doing it before?
No, this is a brand new departure for me. I've never done an Oscar Wilde play before. But there was a real sweetener for it because Oscar Wilde is one of my favourites. I have to say that. Always when people say to me, who said this? And if you always reply Oscar Wilde, 19 times out of 20, you're right. He wrote some great sort of one-liners, and there's some lovely ones in this. He described a fox hunt, he said, as the unspeakable in pursuit of the uneatable.
I didn't know that was an Oscar Wilde quote.
Ah, there you are. You see, I do that quote-unquote on radio quite often, you know. And if they say, who said this, I always say Oscar Wilde. I mostly get a point, whether I've heard it before or not. Does he write lovely, lovely language and lovely gags, lovely observations and all that stuff. And this is different because it's Oscar Wilde really banging the drum for the women of Victorian ages because they were treated so badly, you know. A bit sort of, I suppose it becomes contemporary in a way when you think of the Me Too or, you know, gatherings that are going on everywhere because the Victorians, of course, treated their women not very well at all. They were chattels, my goods and chattels were women. He's banging the drum for them to get a proper deal and everything. So it's rather good. And the sweetener for me of doing an Oscar Wilde play was in not really my style of performing at all. But I said, it's only a very small part. And they said, doesn't matter. Where you sing three songs in it.
Wow.
So I do, you see. And of that period, the Victorian period, right up my street. Old musical songs, except these are rather nice ones, you know. So I do three songs, and that clinched the job for me. So I was there.
Tell me, Roy, did you ever appear at the Brighton Hippodrome?
Never at the Brighton Hippodrome. It was just that little touch before my time. My great sort of link with Brighton really was when I first came into show business, the first variety show I did was with Max Miller at the top of the bill.
Wow.
At the Finsbury Park Empire. And I always loved everything because my gran brought me up and she was a huge fan of Max's. So she always took me to see all over London whenever Max was on. You know, so they formed the Max Miller Appreciation Society, you see. In Brighton, as I'm sure you know about, Chris.
Totally.
Yeah, so they asked me if I'd be the president of it. And, you know, I was a huge fan of Max, and having done work with him as well, I immediately jumped at it because he was the greatest front cloth comedian I ever saw. Well, him and Ken Dodd were the two greatest. So I said, yes, I'd love to be the president, and they're a lovely lot, and it's growing all the time. Now, it doesn't sound right to say the Max Miller Appreciation Society is growing all the time, but you see the new comics and new wave fans of variety and comedy and all that, they worship Max because of the marvellous recordings he made, sound recordings, and one or two films, but the sound recordings he made were a great example of what front cloth comedy is all about, and he was the absolute master. So I was delighted to be the president, and they told me, almost the first thing they told me was, we're trying to get a statue of Max for Brighton, because he was one of Brighton's great names. So I said, they said, but we haven't got enough money yet. I said, oh, well, you know. They said, will you help us raise some money? So I said, I'll try. And I wrote to everybody I knew in show business. And 99% of them sent donations because they all were fans of Max. So almost they paid for the statue. And people of Brighton, of course. And what a smashing statue it is. Myself and Jim Whitfield and George Melly opened the statue. We pulled the cloth off and revealed Max in all his glory. And it's a smashing statue. And it now faces theatre.
Which is great.
He's indicating to anyone who looks at him, that's where you should go, to the theatre. Lovely.
And where you will be with a woman of no importance.
Indeed we will, yes. It's a smashing cast, Lisa Goddard and Isla Blair and lots of sort of buddies I've known over the years. So it'll be a nice team, I think.
Absolutely. And tell us a bit about A Woman of No Importance. What's the storyline?
Well, the storyline, I don't give it away because it's a smashing story. As I say, it is really a woman who's been badly treated. And I don't mean abused or anything like that, but she's been, if you like, she's been put up the duff by someone who is rather upmarket and posh. And that's the start of the story. What happens to them? Do they get together? Do they part like ships in the night? Or you'll never know until the very end of the play. It's a terrifically melodramatic story.
And I look forward to it at the Theatre Royal. Now, Roy, you're possibly best known to our listeners to the Hudlines.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
Do you sort of wish those days could come back?
Well, I do. I felt it was wrong that they took it off because it was one of the most popular shows and we did 26 years on Radio 2 with it. 26 years, which is sort of a record for a show, a comedy show with an audience on radio. So that was very, very nice.
So what is it about comedy that is your lifeblood, obviously?
Yeah.
So what makes you, what's that spark?
Well, I think the thing is, it is the greatest feeling in the world is to get a laugh. We all know that. If you don't even stand up in the pub, but if you're in a pub with a couple of mates and you tell a story and it gets a laugh, it makes you feel terrific. And so to actually get paid for trying to get laughs is the best thing of the lot as a performer. And comedy it's dateless. It really is, you know. The best comedy is dateless. Even though you say, with A Woman of No Importance, if you like, it's a play that really echoes, or we really echoed the play with the news headlines, which was always topical and talked about events that were important and all that sort of stuff. That's what we did in the headlines for 26 years, and here I am, going back to Georgian times to do a similar thing.
Roy, that's been wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us.
Chris, Thanks a lot, love, and I hope you enjoy the show when we're there.
That was, of course, Roy Hudd, and he's appearing in A Woman of No Importance at the Theatre Royal Brighton from Monday the 23rd to Saturday the 28th of September. And now, as it's been Southampton Boat Show over the last few days, let's have a look at some boating activity. In the last programme, we heard from Nicky Henderson, who's the outgoing Yachtsman of the Year. Well, we've just announced the new Yachtsman of the Year, Lucy McGregor. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm complete in shock.
And I asked the same question for Nicky. Are you worried about carrying a title that says Yachtsman?
No, I'm not. I just feel very privileged to be on that trophy with all those incredible other sailors that have won it in the past.
So what's next on the sailing scene for you?
Next is try and plan next year's season, really. There's some great events out there, and it's a case of trying to pick the ones and fitting it around the day job now. So nothing set in stone, but looking forward to the next challenge.
And what is a day job?
The day job is for a civil engineering company called R&W, and I'm business improvement manager there.
So is sailing a hobby, or is it more than that? Would you like it to be a business?
It's a passion, that's for sure, that bit I know. Look, I'm really lucky. I've got an incredible hobby and at times, I guess a job, even though it's not about being paid, it's, you know, some fantastic events to go and compete in and sail with some awesome other sailors and again against some incredible sailors as well.
And next target, Yachtswoman of the Year, Yachtsman of the Year, what else would you like to do?
I don't know, as I say, always looking for a new challenge, and still just a bit shell-shocked about this one at the moment, to be thinking about that.
And congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
And the man behind the awards, Keith Lovett from MS Ablin Boat Insurance. Keith, how much importance is this event to an organisation like MS Ablin?
We have a passion with regard to all aspects of yachting. Yacht racing, yacht sailing, the amateur boat user, and these awards epitomise the people behind yachting. Lots of other awards talk about the boats, the kit, the equipment we use, but these awards are the only awards that really focus on the people, so that's why it's really important to us. We support the industry, support the fraternity, support the sector, but let's support the people.
And how important is the history behind the Yachtsman of the Year trophy?
We've been insuring yachts for 200 years as a Lloyd's syndicate, and to have the legacy of what the Yachtsman of the Year award is all about behind that is just absolutely essential to us. So to be supporting the only true awards that follow the people behind yachting, and it's not just yacht racing, it's the important bit, it's yachting. You know, the guys that sailed a Wayfarer around the UK, you know, tremendous results. So it's about the whole sector, about the whole fraternity, but about the people.
Keith, thank you very much. Lucy, congratulations again.
Thank you.
And that's almost where we must leave this edition of At Home This Morning. But there's just time for me to repeat those all important contact details. For more information on the Age UK Cadbury's anti-loneliness campaign, go to www.ageuk, or one word, .org.uk/donateyourwords. For information on Say Aphasia, just go to their website, which is www.sayaphasia, that's sayaphasia.org. For tickets to see Roy Hudd and the rest of the cast of A Woman of No Importance at the Theatre Royal of Brighton, which runs from Monday the 23rd to Saturday the 28th of September, with evening performances at 7:45 and matinees on Thursday and Saturday at 2:30. either go along to the box office in New Road, Brighton, from 12 noon, Monday to Saturday, or go to atgtickets.org. If you'd like some more details on electric vehicles and whether the mileage is long enough and how much they will cost you, go to www.goultralow, that's goultralow.com. And if you like more information about the Yachtsman of the Year awards, you can go to www.yja.world. And of course, you can visit our website at www.greymattersproductions.org.uk, and you can listen again there to a selection of our most recent programmes. At this point, I must again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, for all the technical operation matters, and of course remind you that Richard will be here with another edition of At Home This Morning in just 2 weeks' time. But now it really is time for me to go. And so until we meet again over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, this is Chris English signing off as usual with Make Sure You Keep Safe and Not Too Warm. Bye for now.